Today is October 31st, and you'll notice a new spelling for October. That's my own innovation. But you are here at the International Symposium on Global Aging Issues, and my name is Larry Branch. I'm a professor at the University of South Florida in Tampa, and we have a panel today of international experts who are going to help us understand global aging issues. I'm going to start with the first presentation, and I'm going to present the context of the United States. I will introduce each of the speakers as we go along. Will that be all right? Okay. Now, if I think I press this one. Then I'm going to press this one. Then I'm going to press this one. Which one do you think? I had a 50-50 chance. Okay, we're going to take the context of the United States, and I would like to start with the concept of health and wealth. A demographer from the United Kingdom about a year or two ago produced a YouTube video which was excellent and presented 100 years of worldwide history on health and wealth over 150 countries. And it's an amazing video, but he charts over, I said 100 years, I'm sorry, over 300 years, goes through health and wealth of countries and shows that health and wealth are inexplicably interrelated. When the wealth of a country goes up, the health of the country goes up. He was measuring wealth primarily as gross domestic product divided by population, which is therefore per capita gross domestic product. And he was measuring health, interestingly, as simply life expectancy. Okay, so the association between increasing life expectancy and increasing wealth in a country is firmly established. Now I want to go to the case of the United States in the 20th century to help present the case of the United States. In the beginning of the 20th century, 1900, that was the year I was born, and in 1900, the life expectancy in the United States was about approximately 47 years. But the interesting thing was, or another interesting thing was, that 33% of the mortality in the United States in 1900 was attributable to a cluster of infectious diseases. This cluster included pneumonia, tuberculosis, diarrhea, a variety of infectious communicable diseases. And by the midpoint of the 20th century, the mortality attributable to those causes, which at the beginning of the century accounted for 33% of the mortality, went down to 3% of the mortality, which presents us with an interesting and extremely important concept: premature and preventable causes of mortality. Okay? You just have to understand that every country everywhere is going to be plagued by causes of mortality that are both preventable and are premature mortality from the perspective of keeping individuals and countries from living to the maximum life potential. Okay? So, in the United States, the case of the United States, we had the cluster of infectious disease mortality decrease from 33% to 3%, and life expectancy went up 20 years. Okay, this is good news. Life expectancy going up, health and wealth, I'm sorry, the wealth part of the health and wealth correlation is going up. And we're focusing on the specific causes of mortality. Then you get to the case of the United States in the 1970s, when those premature infectious disease mortality. Excuse me a minute. Yes, ma'am. Oh, you're counting. I'm sorry. I thought you were waving to me. Oh, now I interrupted your count too. I'm sorry. She wasn't waving at me. I thought she was. I'm sorry. Okay, start over. 1, 2, 3. Sack Dr. Gulitz. We are in the middle of the 1970s. In the United States, we had 42% of the mortality attributable to cardiovascular disease, 40 to 45%, and 25% attributable to, what's the second leading cause of death? Cancers. Okay? Now, interestingly, since the midpoints of 1970s, and for cancer closer to 1980, the mortality rates attributable to cardiovascular disease and cancer in the United States have decreased. Okay? So that immediately tells you what? Cardiovascular disease and cancers are both causes of premature, preventable mortality. How do we know how to prevent the mortality of cardiovascular disease and cancer? It's primarily four things. We all know them. Diet, exercise, no smoking, choose your parents well. Okay? You do those four things and you greatly reduce your risk of preventable premature mortality due to cardiovascular disease or cancer, which then invites the next question. So, if you sidestep premature and preventable mortality until age 90, then what are you going to die of? I'm waiting for an answer. I'm sorry? Natural death, not at 90. See, I'm thinking that I'm one of those that thinks lifespan for human beings is approximately 120. That is, you know, every time you read in the newspaper that the oldest living person has just died, and if you pay attention, their ages are approximately 120. I think that's lifespan for human beings. And by my definition of premature mortality, anything that's, I'm going to say 110 is sort of the low side standard deviation, and maybe we'll even say 100 to 120, but any death before that I'm going to say is preventable and premature. Now you might want to argue with me on that, but I've got the microphone right now, so you'll lose for the moment, but you might win in the long run. But I'm just going to put that forth as the proposition. Anytime we're dying before age 100, it's a preventable, premature cause of mortality. And if you look at the growth and development of nations and this strong association between wealth and health, defined as life expectancy, they're going step by step. Okay? And then you add in the concept of, at a national and individual level, the goal of public health is to make sure that we minimize the causes of preventable and premature mortality so that we increase lifespan as close to life, I'm sorry, that we increase life expectancy as close to lifespan as possible. That's our goal. And around the world, countries, nobody answered my question, though, of what we're going to die of. I'm sorry, I was about to go to the next one, but we've got a question on the floor. What are we going to die of? We had the suggestion that it would be at around 90, and I've decided to arbitrarily say that it needs to be closer to 100. And so the question still remains. If you bypass premature and preventable causes of mortality attributable to Communicable infectious diseases, such as the cluster we identified in the United States at 1900. If we reduce mortality to cardiovascular disease and cancer, let me just say down to a 10% level, and life expectancy in your country is 90 years of age, what are you going to die of? What are going to be the primary causes of death at age 90? Other chronic diseases, perhaps. My guess is, and I think a lot about this because I'm getting there, my guess is it's going to be degenerative neurologic disorders. I think it's going to be that we do not know enough about our neuronal system to maximize optimal health. We know enough about our cardiovascular system now to maximize cardiovascular health. We don't know enough about our neuronal system to maximize neuronal health, and I think degenerative neurologic disorders are a byproduct of not maintaining our neuronal systems as well as we could. And I'm not blaming anyone because there's not a good science base for it as yet, but there will be. You know, when death is occurring by communicable preventive diseases, the focus of research is on the communicable preventive diseases, as it should be. And when the mortality is attributable to cardiovascular disease and cancer, that's where the research is, as it should be. But as soon as we become successful in those areas, it's going to introduce the next challenge. And if you want to be ahead of the curve, think about what people are going to die of and what you can do to identify the premature and preventable aspects of those components. Okay? So that's the case of the 20th century in the United States. It introduces the concept of preventable and premature mortality, which I think is pervasive. The other thing that they always say about those the oldest living person who finally succumbs to death, and they give a brief biography of his or her life, and most often it's a her, they always note that they have the smallest medical record. Their medical file is very small. The longevity is not a function of diseases being cured, it's a function of diseases being prevented. Sorry about that. If I tilt this, will that come down? No, that just shows you how technologically incompetent I am. It says up there what you can't read is countries with expanding, well, see, that's better. That's better. But those first words up there, where you only see the bottom part, are countries with expanding health and wealth can learn lessons from the first generation developed countries. And you can learn a lot of lessons then from North America and Europe. That is Asia, Africa, and South America, and other places within North America and within, you know, it's not continent specific. There are developed countries in all of the continents, and there are still places that are under development in all of the continents, as I would consider Mexico still a developing country in North America, and same with Europe. But you can look to the first generation developed countries and you can learn lessons. You don't necessarily, well, see, I don't know why it went up there. I'm going to go back for a minute and leave it there. That's okay. It's okay. Thank you, though. You can learn the lessons from the developed countries and not necessarily repeat our same mistakes. And I think that's the purpose of this symposium, to try and present an overview of the issues of global aging. And I'm trying to set a context that our goals are, the primary goal is simple enough. It's to allow all people in all countries to approach maximum lifespan by the eradication of premature and preventable mortality. Now, it's probably not going to happen in the next couple of years, but I think that's our long-term goal. And those countries that are further along on the wealth and health trajectory can provide lessons for those countries that are lower on the health and wealth trajectory. And that's what we're here to do. And I would just end by saying that from one point of view, that line at the top says, in the United States, aging research at the present time does not emphasize prevention, but does emphasize rehabilitation and long-term care. That's where we find ourselves now. Come right up, sir. There's a seat here in the front for you. We'll wait for Alan to get up here. And you might make other choices in other countries. Our healthcare delivery system functions much better in the curative mode, in the rehabilitation mode, than it does in the prevention mode. But that's a choice. And other countries can do things differently, but as it turns out, in aging research, we focus much more on rehabilitation and long-term care than other countries. And